A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Thanks for tuning in to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. It is great to have you with us here on the program. You know, remember Friday when I was talking about the CPAC crud and how I caught it at CPAC? Yeah. Well, you may have seen the news over the weekend that at least one individual who was at CPAC has tested positive for coronavirus. Now, I don't think that that's actually what I had. I never had a fever, didn't have the cough that was associated with this. So I did, however, contact my local hospital in Farmville over the weekend, explain, you know, I was at CPAC. I came down with what I'm pretty sure was a head cold, but, you know, given the, do I need to go in and get tested? And basically I was told, well, we're not doing the tests here. You could come in, we could test you for everything but that. And then if we, you know, ruled everything else out, then, you know, we might ask you to isolate yourself. And say, all right, well, listen, I'm already fairly socially distanced anyway. You know, the big driveway behind me kind of proof of that. So I am just sort of staying to myself as much as possible. I don't think that I have the coronavirus, but, you know, better safe than sorry. And I am a little concerned. As I think I talked about this on Friday's show, my wife's immune system being compromised. So, yeah, hopefully I didn't give her anything. Now, speaking of illnesses and things that make you sick, gun owners feel a little queasy about the gun control laws that were passed in the state of Virginia this year. The legislative session came to an end over the weekend, kind of. Saturday midnight was supposed to be the legislative deadline, but the House and the Senate were arguing over a constitutional amendment that would set up a nonpartisan redistricting system in the state of Virginia as opposed to the partisan redistricting that we have at the moment. Democrats were all in favor of this nonpartisan agreement when they were not in the majority. But then when they took control, House Democrats decided, you know what, we kind of like being in charge here. Let us redraw the map. So there was a great deal of back and forth in the waning hours of the session for a little bit of time. It actually looked like there were going to be a number of pretty high-profile bills, including raising the minimum wage, decriminalizing cannabis, that all of that was going to fall by the wayside because the House and the Senate squabbling was so bad. Now, ultimately, what happened was the Senate or the House caved. They sent the constitutional amendment language over to the Senate, and the two sides agreed to come in on Sunday. They extended the legislative session basically a few hours, and then they're going to come back, I guess, later in the week and work on the budget. Now, none of that matters as far as the gun control bills go, because that was a huge priority for both the House and the Senate, and for Governor Ralph Northam as well. And for the most part, Governor Ralph Northam got his way, with one obviously very big exception, House Bill 961, the quote-unquote assault weapons ban, the magazine ban, the suppressor ban, the trigger activator ban. That fell by the wayside, died in the Senate Judiciary Committee, but it will be back next session. It will. And the Democrats who support this measure are going to be working very hard on the four Senate Democrats who voted against this bill. Because none of them said, unless I'm opposed to banning the most commonly produced rifle in America today. All of them agreed in principle on the idea of a quote-unquote assault weapons ban. It's just the specific language of House Bill 961 that they couldn't get behind. So we're not out of the woods yet. But here to take a closer look at the gun bills that did pass and will become law, Dave Adams, Legislative Affairs Director of the Virginia Shooting Sports Association, joined me to break down the final language in the gun control proposals that are heading to Governor Ralph Northam's desk. Take a look and a listen. Dave, thanks so much for coming on the program, sir. It's good talking with you today.
Thanks a lot for having me back, Cam.
You bet. Well, the legislative session is over, although I guess they might have to come back and work on a budget, but they got all of their bills taken care of, and Ralph Northam looks like he's going to get to sign plenty of gun control bills here in a few days.
Yes, he will have everything he wanted at the beginning of the session, with the exception of the ban on the so-called assault weapons. They gave him everything else that he wanted. He has already signed one program bill, which is the one that allows you to get the sales tax exemption of gun safe that's up to, I think, $1,000. But none of the other bills got to him in time to sign a single extension. So he has until, I believe, April, first part of April, before the region D section comes out.
Okay, so let's talk about some of these specific bills and what they ended up looking like, if you don't mind, Dave, because I know a number of these bills went to a conference committee. We had talked, I think, last time about red flag legislation. That one, you know, ultimately now it's going to be up to, what, one law enforcement officer, not two. No consultation with the Commonwealth's attorneys. You got these ex parte hearings. And then, what is it, 2 weeks? After your firearms are seized, is that when you get your day in court?
That's correct. 14 days.
Okay, so 14 days. Then you've got the bill dealing with statewide firearms preemption laws. What did the final version end up looking like here? Was it was it closer to the House version, where it was basically an end to firearms preemption in the state of Virginia, or was it the more limited version that passed out of the state Senate, where government property, government buildings, which includes, you know, fairgrounds, coliseums, this would allow them to ban gun shows there, but public parks, I think, was also included. But simply in terms of where the possession of firearms could be banned, as opposed to allowing, you know, Alexandria or Fairfax to set loose a quote unquote assault weapons ban. What does the firearms preemption language look like?
Yeah, so we're still taking a look at that because it went through so many iterations. The Senate version was much more limited as it came out. And then, of course, they all started amending the other bills as they came over from the other chamber. And then they made changes to the Senate bill that the Senate seemed to be happy with when it got to the House Public Safety Committee, which inserted the public park portion of the bill. So I'm actually still reviewing that because it went through so many changes. Right now, and I don't think it is as broad as what the House wanted, but it's also a little bit more broad than what the Senate originally wanted.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll keep our eyes peeled for your analysis on that. One gun a month. It does come with the exemption for concealed carry licensees, so that kind of takes us back to the status quo, what we had in Virginia up until about 2012, which I think, by the way, might end up spurring people to get their concealed carry license. Which brings us to the bill that dealt with the language of who could actually teach these courses and what courses would be accepted. There was a big battle over whether or not NRA would be mentioned in the specific legislation or whether or not NRA-approved safety courses would not be allowed to be taught for your concealed carry license. What was the final resolution there, Dave?
The Senate won out on that when they inserted back all references to the NRA that the House had taken out.
Okay.
So now it only affects the online training that had been allowed since 2012, I believe. That has been taken out, and so now all the other courses that were in there, 150 courses, in-person by NRA-certified trainers and NRA-certified training are now allowed, as they were in the past.
Okay. All right. Well, you know, I'm sad that the online courses are going away, but I'm glad that the anti-NRA forces and really the folks who wanted to make it much more difficult to obtain a concealed carry license in Virginia, I'm glad that they have lost out, at least for now. So when you look at all of these bills, and I know that it's still early, Governor Northam hasn't signed any of them yet, but can I ask, Dave, are there conversations taking place about litigation strategies at this point?
We actually began those conversations at the beginning of the session. A lot of that had to do with the so-called assault weapons ban bills, but there's also been discussion on the red flag bill. One of the things that I think has been occurring around the country, and I'd have to take a look at individual cases. I think most of those have been challenged on Second Amendment grounds. I don't know if there's been one challenged on Fourth Amendment grounds yet. Everyone that's been challenged so far has been found to be so-called constitutional according to the lower court. I think that the discussion needs to be had on whether you challenge it instead on Fourth Amendment grounds, because I honestly do believe there are many due process issues still in the current legislation as it's coming out of the House of Representatives.
Okay. Well, I know that we're going to have a lot of these discussions. July 1st is going to be the effective date of these new laws. And I got to ask, now that the session is over, we're going to have the governor's signing ceremony. He's going to get a lot of press. And, he's going to take his victory lap. I don't believe that any of these laws that are coming will make Virginia any safer. But what is your advice to gun owners right now? I mean, we saw the incredible rise of the Second Amendment Sanctuary Movement. We've seen tens of thousands of people descend on the state capitol to voice their objections. Where does that energy need to go right now to be the most productive and to have the biggest impact that it can, Dave?
I think they need to be talking to their legislators, especially the ones that have shooting ranges in their district, about the so-called assault weapons, modern sporting rifles, why they're practical. Craigie made the comment that he doesn't think those firearms are practical firearms. So I would hope that, for instance, Venus Firearms, which is in Aspen, which is in his district, will ask him out to their plant to show him just why those firearms are practical. I hope the shooting ranges, like the Roanoke Rifle and Revolver Club that are in Senator Edwards' district, will invite him out to see a competition and how those firearms are used every weekend between March and September in competition. And the same with Cap Peterson up at the Arlington Fairfax on the WLA range. And Thurville, who's also in, Scott Thurville, who's also a senator in Fairfax, while that range is not in his district, but right there in his area, we need to be using the time we've got from now and next session to educate the legislators that voted to table that, or at least pass that bill by for the next year, to educate them on why these firearms are just like any other firearms. They're not, quote, military or weapons of war.
All right. Dave Adams, Legislative Affairs Director with the Virginia Shooting Sports Association. Listen, I appreciate all of your work over the course of this session. I know it was an uphill battle, but y'all were there. VCDL was there at all of these committees. I got to tell you, your Twitter feed at VSSA on Twitter has been an absolutely invaluable resource for myself and for gun owners all across the state. So thank you for everything that you've done, Dave.
Well, and thank you for all the reporting you've done, because I think that the best thing we did was getting out information to gun owners. It was a concerted effort of all of the gun groups in Virginia, the NRA, BCDL, BSSA, and of course the gun owners who showed up at committee. There were a lot of gun owners that took time off from work to show up in committee meetings.
Absolutely. Well, the fight continues. And Dave, thank you so much for your time today, sir.
All right. Thank you, Cam.
You bet. Dave Adams joining us here on Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. All right. Let's turn our attention now to our armed citizen story, our good deed of the day, our recidivist report. And there's an email that I want to share with you as well before we get out of here. We'll start with our recidivist report. Erie, Pennsylvania. Now, this is, listen, I got to tell you, this is just one of these stories that happens, 1,000 times a day around the country. Erie man gets state prison in shooting other court actions. So what attracted me to this story originally was that first part of the headline, but then Barry, the other court actions actually has, I think, a far more representative case in terms of the recidivism report and the slaps on the wrist that people will get when they break the gun control laws that anti-gun advocates, not even the gun control laws that anti-gun advocates want to put on the book, the actual laws against, like, let's say, being a felon in possession of a firearm. So this comes from GoErie.com. Tavion Larkin, 27 years of age, received 2 to 5 years in state prison at his sentencing on Friday for firing shots near a now closed downtown club in April. 2 years of probation. Larkin pleaded guilty in January to a second degree felony count of aggravated assault and a third degree felony count of carrying a firearm without a license. Nobody was injured in this shooting. 2 to 5 years. He's going to do two, minus the time for good behavior. So he's probably going to do one year behind bars for shooting. And it did not hit anybody, but shooting. But then later in this court roundup from GoErie.com, there was another case where you got some guys who are pleading down their crimes to near nothingness. this case, let's see if I can, of course, now I can't find it. Two brothers, I believe, is here we go. Rashawn Pugh. Yes. Two brothers accused of exchanging gunfire during a confrontation in a West Erie neighborhood are facing less serious charges now in the Erie police case following their recent preliminary hearings. 34-year-old Rashawn Pugh waived to court a second-degree misdemeanor count of recklessly endangering at his hearing on Monday and a felony count of possession of a firearm prohibited and a first-degree misdemeanor count of possessing an instrument of crime were withdrawn at the hearing. In other words, this guy's accused of being a felon in possession of a firearm. But that charge is being dropped and in exchange, a misdemeanor count of recklessly endangering is being applied instead. 39-year-old Rasheen Pugh waived a second-degree misdemeanor count of recklessly endangering at his preliminary hearing on February 13th after prosecutors withdrew a felony count of discharge of a firearm into an occupied structure and third-degree misdemeanor count of criminal mischief. Erie police accused the two of firing gunshots during a confrontation back on January 26th. No one was injured in the shooting. Investigators say they connected the brothers to the crime through eyewitness information, surveillance video, and confessions by the suspects. But, hey, even with all of that evidence, let's go ahead and drop the felony-level charges, including felon in possession of a firearm, and allow them to plead down to misdemeanor crimes instead. Yeah. All right. On to our armed citizen story. From Orange County, California, where KTLA reports a resident shot an intruder during a break-in in Bray, California. Happened just after 7:30 Sunday morning, according to police. So not in the dark of night. Police said a written statement. Officers responded to a report of a male suspect who'd been shot by a resident while attempting to break into a home. Suspect found suffering from a single gunshot wound, taken to a hospital, undergoing surgery Sunday afternoon. Police said residents of the home were cooperating with investigators. No other details were released. We'll keep our eyes on any more details out of Bray, California. But yes, even in California, you can have a case of armed self-defense when somebody breaks into your home. Finally, our good deed of the day from Muscatine, Iowa, where an off-duty police officer at a party ended up saving the life of a 7-year-old boy. Officer Whitney Pena was at this party. 7-year-old Kaysen Simonson went underwater in a pool. She said, I noticed one of my other good friends was pulling a child out of the shallow end of the pool deck. I ran down there. She said, when I made it down there, there was a child blue and purple in the face, no sign of life. She says, that's when she started CPR. She says, I did CPR what felt like 10 minutes. She says it was probably only 2 or 3. She says she learned CPR at the police academy. But this was the first time that she was ever actually doing this in a real-life situation. She said, I've been a police officer for 12 years. So every year we train in CPR. She said, I've been secondary in CPR, but never been the primary. She said, one thing I've never done is to have to endure a child when they've been in that type of situation. The parents said that they left the party for a few minutes to go to Walmart, a few minutes from the hotel where this occurred. Amy Hahn said it happened so quickly is something we have to be thankful for every day. And she says, you know, looking back, she says, I would not have left. She said, I recommend any parent stay at the party no matter what. Make sure your child's safe. If it wasn't for the officer, he would have been gone. Kaysen's parents say that Pena is their guardian angel, according to OurQuadCities.com. And Whitney Pena going to be honored with a life-saving award there in Muscatine, Iowa, at an upcoming city council meeting. So in the right place, at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. Officer Whitney Pena, we thank you for your very, very good deed. Now, finally, before we go, I do want to get to one email that we received based on our conversation with John Stokes on Friday, talking about the coronavirus and how to prepare. Are you prepared? This, I thought, was fascinating. I'm not going to use his name just because he's reporting from an authoritarian country, but we'll call him S. So I heard from S, who grew up in the United States, but lives in China now, said not far from Shanghai. He says, because I live under an authoritarian government which does not respect the right to armed self-defense, I'm unable to exercise my Second Amendment rights here, but I've been enjoying your show for several months. So first of all, thank you. For that. Now, he says He says the news of COVID-19 hit while my wife and I were in her hometown in the Chinese countryside for the Lunar New Year, surrounded by rice paddies. He says we were stuck there for over a month due to travel restrictions with about 20 family members. Her family, though, he says, had a vegetable garden, ducks, chickens, and their eggs and other staples all at home. A lot of meat already salted, dried, or frozen. He says other necessities could be purchased from neighbors. He says we did okay. It was just a bit crowded. But after about a month, he says they were able to get back to their home city. And he says here, it's very different in an urban environment. He says entry into neighborhoods is restricted. Many businesses are closed. Everybody's wearing masks. Movements are tracked by your mobile phone. He says, but all the necessities are available, which is interesting. He says the Chinese don't do much preserved food except for some salted or frozen meat, as I mentioned earlier. He says the biggest problem is that I cannot work right now because the government has ordered my industry to work online until further notice, and my boss doesn't think that what I do basically is enough to charge money for. He says, so I'm stuck at home with a paltry living stipend. But he says, we have plenty of money in the bank. My wife's a good cook. He says, I just hope we don't have to dig too far into savings before I can start earning a living again. S also says, hope you and Missy are able to weather this storm well. My mom is currently fighting late stage cancer and has had to change therapies a few times, so I know how it goes. And I just got to say thank you, first of all, for thinking about my wife right now with everything that you're going through as well. Obviously, our best wishes to you and to your wife and to your extended family over there. But again, if you want to chime in, you want to respond, I have a feeling this is going to be something we're going to be talking about for the next couple of months. The email address, cam.edwards@bearingarms.com. And again, we would love to hear from you on your prepping plans, if you have already begun them, if you're starting them now. As John Stokes said on Friday, probably a little late to start thinking about it in terms of prepping and more in terms of an emergency response, right? You know the hurricane is coming. You don't know how bad it's going to be. You don't know where exactly it's going to hit. But, you know, the odds are good that you're going to feel some type of impact. All right. That is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. Thank you again for being a part of the program each and every day. It really does mean a lot to me. Email address, cam.edwards@bearingarms.com. Once again, tomorrow, more of the latest Second Amendment news and information from all across the nation. We'll see you then. Don't forget, you can subscribe right here, Town Hall Media on YouTube or Apple Podcasts. That way you never miss a program. Also, Spotify, Stitcher, townhall.com's podcast page. And you can become a VIP member of Bearing Arms as well with exclusive commentary, analysis, and more. You can do that at bearingarms.com. We do thank you for your support for our Second Amendment journalism. Enjoy the rest of what is shaping up to be a pretty wild Monday. And we will see you soon with another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company.